security with quantum physics.
Yeah, that's right. So my name is Kevin Bogner. I'm a PhD student at COSIC. COSIC focuses about everything cryptography related at the University KU Leuven in Belgium. And I want to talk about quantum distance bounding, how to advance secure proximity. So the term quantum distance bounding basically divides into two areas. So you have the quantum part and the distance bounding part. The distance bounding part is a cryptographic protocol between two communicating parties. These parties are communicating in such a way that you are able to estimate the physical distance between these two parties. And quantum in this part basically means that we are relying on quantum mechanics to achieve this physical distance approximation. Usually when I talk about quantum and cryptography, people confuse these two topics. So we have post-quantum cryptography and quantum cryptography. Post-quantum cryptography is basically the development or the upgrade of our current classical cryptography, because we have the advancements of Shor algorithm and Grover's algorithm, and they currently break our classical systems. That's why we are developing post-quantum cryptography. It's basically slapping more mathematics on the issues, and it's not breakable with even when we have access to large-scale quantum computers. On the other hand, we have quantum cryptography, which basically relies on the magic of quantum mechanics. So these systems are even safe when you have access to unlimited computing power. In this talk, we're going to focus on the later one, so I think I'm the only one in this timetable who focuses on quantum cryptography and not really on quantum computing in that sense. All right, I want to start with a problem called the chess grandmaster problem. So just imagine you have two countries that are in war with each other. So you have country yellow and country green. And there's an actual system that got developed during World War II called identification friend or foe. And so how does it work? So both countries have access to missiles and also to planes. So what the missile does when it finds a plane flying above the territory, it gives the plane a challenge, and this plane then responds to this challenge, so the plane is not shot down. It's identified as a friend. So what happens if a missile finds a plane, which turns out to be an enemy plane? The plane, of course, or the pilot is smart, so what they are doing, they take this challenge, relay it to an airline missile. This airline missile finds an enemy plane. The enemy plane doesn't want to get shot, of course, so it responds to this challenge. This challenge is relayed back to the plane and used as the response for the missile from the enemy system. And with this idea, with this concept, they're able to circumvent the whole thing, and it's actually happened. So people thought, okay, maybe there's an interesting way if we implement clever cryptography to get rid of this whole problem. Turned out that's not the case, but there is something we can exploit, and it's basically the fact that this blue-black errors take way longer than the communication here on the green side. So this was kind of the development of distance bounding protocols. So I will give you a really high level overview of distance bounding protocols. You have a trust boundary, which is predetermined, so it's basically a physical distance. You have two communicating parties, the verifier and the prover. And these parties are communicating with each other in a challenge response manner. So what I basically told you, the verifier sends a challenge to the prover responds to this challenge. What the verifier does, the verifier stops the time how long it takes for the prover to respond to this challenge. Once the response is there on the verifier side, they can estimate the distance between these two parties. As in this example, the prover is outside of this trust boundary, so access is denied. If we have another party within this trust boundary, then access is granted. And if someone tries to trick the system by relaying the challenge, then access is also denied. That's basically the slide I showed you before. And you might be asking, where's the quantum part here? So the traditional or classical distance bounding protocols, they usually use as this medium of exchange classical bits. But in our example, we will use qubits for that. All right, so you might be asking, why are we doing this? So why are we not sticking with traditional distance bounding protocols? So what's the motivation for quantum distance bounding protocols? So there are some issues on the physical layer for classical distance bounding protocols. So you have conversion delays from analog to digital communication, and then you need to do the vice versa conversion, and this introduced some delays, so the distance measurement isn't as accurate as anymore. Then people thought, okay, maybe switch to a full analog processing thing, so we will get rid of all the digital stuff, do full analog stuff. Turns out this also introduced some new attacks, and people then thought, some researchers, okay, how about we change the whole system, instead of using radio frequency, we will use ultrasonic channels to slow the whole protocol down. Turns out this also introduced some attack vectors. So you might be wondering where or what are some possible applications for quantum distance bounding. Usually these two pop up in that case. So you have quantum networks, which are basically fiber-based quantum networks where you have several parties communicating with each other. You have quantum repeater, and it makes sense to imply quantum distance bounding there to kind of check that these parties are the amount apart as we expect them that they are. So we will kind of have an additional security measurement. The same can also be applied to satellite to ground communication, where you have free space links from Earth station and satellites. And what I want to emphasize on, that to implement quantum distance bounding protocols, you don't need a hardware or infrastructure upgrade. If you have quantum networks already in place, it's basically a plug-and-play solution. So I want, we've talked about entanglement, and usually I'm sure some people already saw this example, but I will try to quickly explain entanglement with this one. So just imagine you have a classical coin flip with two independent coins, and you flip them at the same time. That's your experiment. What you are looking for as the outcome is you have tails-tails or heads-heads. So you're looking for the same outcome. As if you have classical coins, you flip them. At some stage, at some point, you maybe receive as a result tails and heads. You repeat the whole experiment, and then by some chance, you receive heads and heads. So what I want to point out is that in a classical sense, if you repeat this experiment a lot of times, then at max you can have a probability of 50% to have the same outcome, so tails-tails or heads-heads. So what happens if we have some quantum coins that are entangled in a special way? So you repeat the whole experiment, two coins, you flip them at a time, then you receive tails-tails. Then you're like, okay, that's crazy, let's repeat again. Flip them two coins, then you receive heads-heads. And if you think like, okay, that's something is off, something strange is going on here, then I will congratulate you on this idea, because you just had a similar idea as Albert Einstein in 1935, where he wrote a paper about it. Can quantum mechanical description of physics really be considered complete? TLDR, yes. That's basically it. You can read about it. John Stuart Bell came up with the theory about it in 2022. These three gentlemen, Alan Aspect, John F. Clauser, and Anton Zeilinger, they proved it with their experiments that quantum entanglement is actually a thing. Okay, with this information, we are able to tackle the quantum distance bounding protocol on a really high level. So as I told you, you have the two communicating parties. Here on the left side, we have the verifier, and on the right side, we have the prover. These two parties agree on a secret key, only known to these two parties. And as I told you, they are communicating in a challenge response manner, so the verifier sends the challenge to the prover then responds to this challenge. The protocol starts by the verifier generating an entangled pair of particles, sends one half of the particle to the prover, the other half is kept by the verifier. What the verifier does once this particle leaves the verifier is it starts the clock. This is used for this timing measurement that I told you before. The verifier then, while this particle is flying the qubit to the prover, the verifier measures their own particle and receives some result. Once this particle reaches the prover also performs a measurement. And as we learned by the slides before, these two measurements need to be correlated because they are basically this quantum coin flip that I just told you about. So what the prover then does, the prover uses this measurement result as the one ingredient and the key as the second ingredient to generate a new qubit which is then sent over to the verifier as the response. So this flies to the verifier side. The verifier then stops the clock. And as I told you, this timing component is then used to estimate the distance between these two communicating parties. So the verifier performs a measurement, and this measurement is determined by the private key. And if the prover genuinely did the action on their entangled particle, and if the prover has access to the secret key, then these two measurement results on the verifier side should be the same, which means that the protocol was successfully executed and you can estimate the distance between these two communicating parties. And you don't do this once, you do this a lot of times, because in quantum mechanics, as we already learned, you have this probabilistic thing, so an attacker has some chance to succeed if you do it only once. But we repeat this whole protocol a lot of times and can then use this distance to say how far these two parties are apart. So in terms of contribution, I use Qiskit for a lot of my simulations, basically all of them nowadays. So I first simulate the protocols, which are public in this repo. And I also take, or we also take inspiration from traditional distance bounding protocols, what kinds of attack are applied there, try to simulate them in our example to kind of make sure that these do not apply and our protocol is safe in that sense. So we've written four papers. I only one, so to be honest. The rest one is done by my promoters. So the two on the bottom, they do not even use entanglement, so you only rely on this, on the secret keys that these two parties are sharing with each other. The second bullet point is a protocol where we have entanglement, and there you have entanglement to have one execution of the whole protocol. And with that, you are able to authenticate not only the, so the verifier is not able to authenticate only the prover, but also vice versa, so the prover can authenticate the verifier. And the first paper, we use Bell's inequality. I won't touch on that, but it's basically an additional security measurement to really see that the prover generally performed the actions on the received particle. So what are the future plans? For now, this theoretical idea and theoretical protocol. First step should be to have a formal security analysis. So what I told you about is that we are looking at some attacks in the traditional distance bounding protocols, but we want to have a proper security proof in that sense. Once this is done and we are finally sure that our protocol is secure, we move on to an experimental setup. So I'm in contact with some experimental physicists that already have some experience in that domain. So we want to have this distance bounding, quantum distance bounding protocol on a really small scale, so in some lab setting. And once this is also working as intended, then we can scale this up to some bigger distance. So the two final takeaways of this presentation are, first, with a quantum distance bounding protocol, you're not only able to ensure who you're talking to, but you're also able to identify how far the other party is apart from you. And the second point is, with quantum distance bounding protocol, it's basically a plug-and-play solution. You have seamless integration in networks where you already have this quantum hardware in place. Yeah. That's it from my side. I'm happy to take any questions. So the question is the difference between the classical distance bounding and quantum distance bounding. Maybe I will skip to this slide. So I know I didn't cover all of the details how qubits work, but they have some really interesting properties. So for classical distance bounding, you are exchanging classical bits as we know them. And for the quantum part, you exchange qubits for this part. And they have some interesting properties. As I said, this entanglement thing is ones that make them unique. They have a no cloning theorem, so you're basically not able to copy and paste as we know it in our normal world. And another property is, when you have an eavesdropper that wants to make a measurement on this qubit, it basically destroys it. So you're not able, if you have an eavesdropper or an adversary that sits between these two communicating parties, wants to pick up a qubit and reads it and then sends it over, this doesn't work. That's a really fundamental physical thing in quantum mechanics. So this is some advantage that we used. That's why we are transited to quantum distance bounding. But the general idea is the same. So that does this answer your question? Okay. Yeah, go.
I mean, kind of following up from there then, I understand that you cannot like clone it, but if ultimately what you want to do is send back the qubit with some additional stuff in order to basically verify that you are the friend, not the enemy, are you not also then able to just send the qubit that got sent to you around and kind of do the same thing as you as the, what happened?
Yeah. So you basically, what you're trying, the question is if you're not basically able to reflect the incoming qubit, right, as a challenge? So it's basically setting a mirror in between?
You get sent like the qubit with some challenge.
Yeah.
Obviously, you are, let's say, the enemy in this case, so you know you can't return the challenge correctly. So you just send it to your own missile, which then sends this qubit as if it's, this is our own like quantum thing, but like, you know what I mean? Like the same thing that happened in the war.
I will use maybe this. I don't know if it answers your question. So basically sending the incoming qubit back. I don't know if I covered this correctly.
No.
So store it.
No, what happened in was it World War II that you said was like that you send that challenge around basically to a friendly, like, so let's say party A sends a challenge to party B. Party B cannot, like, reply it. So it sends it to the missile that is connected to it. And then you ask a plane from party A to basically do this proof, and when it sends it back, you kind of just route it all the way back around. Right?
But that's basically so the question is if in this example I showed with missiles and planes, if it's not able to kind of route the qubit or the challenge in a clever way, right?
Yes.
To mitigate the whole thing. But that's the timing component that we have here, which makes it not possible. So if someone tries to route anything, sending the qubits are photons in that sense, so you have the speed of light as fast as possible, so it can't go any faster. And you basically have this timing component, so it's not able for someone. It would be spotted if you take the qubit, send it to somewhere else, send it there and back and forth, and this doesn't work. So, and another point is these secret keys. So the thing is, the prover does not only receive the qubit, but the prover also performs this action on the qubit, right?
Yes.
So therefore, only if they have the access to the key and also used the entangled qubit they received, then they are able to send a correct response.
Okay, but ultimately what I want to know is if the timing is kind of what makes the difference, the timing can also be used in a classical setup, right?
Yeah, the timing is also a thing in the traditional distance bounding protocols. That's not a unique thing to quantum distance bounding. But maybe we are... We're having some issues, but we can talk anyways after the presentation. Yeah.
So I have two questions. First of all, about the initial qubit exchange of the quantum distance bounding protocol. So how do the two parties choose the basis in which they measure the orange qubit? Is it chosen at random or in fixed basis?
So in this example, we have the orange basis. They are fixed in this example. So we have this. We have this correlation, and for this part where the prover, I should repeat the question. So the question is how are the bases chosen basically in the protocol? For this example, the key basically determines the bases. So in this example, so if the key is binary, if the key is zero in this thing, then we use the computational basis, and if it's one, we use the Hadamard basis. And with this, the verifier is also able to correctly decode the incoming qubit.
And my second question is about the physical properties of the qubit exchange. Like at the beginning of the talk, you mentioned like military applications like IFF.
Yeah.
How would you exchange a coherent qubit state in such a situation? Like if you use polarized photons, you'd have to aim pretty precisely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So the question is how to make this qubit exchange also with regards to this military example I showed in the beginning. Yeah, that's right. This also comes down to these applications of quantum distance bounding protocols. And I have a lot of slides, so I need... So here it's straightforward for quantum networks, right? You have fiber. They are fiber-based, so it's easy to communicate. But I get that's of course an interest and good point that you're pointing out here, that these satellite to ground communication, they need to be really accurate in a certain angle to make this exchange possible, and also you need to this line of sight, so it's also weather dependent. But yeah, I'm not really on this physical side, so I can't give you a satisfying answer on that sense. But yeah, there are you have quantum key distribution. Maybe you've heard of that. Yeah, they use this satellite to ground communication over a really, really long distance. The Chinese did it with, like, I don't know, 400, 500 kilometers. So it's possible, it's feasible, but I don't know how they exactly pull this one off. Yeah.
But in this case, you don't want to use satellite to ground communication because then it would mess up your timing, right?
Like if for quantum key distribution, there's no timing component.
Okay, but I mean for the quantum distance one
thing? In our example, we want to have a communication from the ground to the satellite and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would it be possible to combine this with JD, for instance, to improve or extend JD, for instance, for helping the authentication?
Yeah, that's a good point. We're working on that. I on purpose said we are. Is it possible the question is it possible to combine our quantum distance bounding protocol with quantum key distribution protocol? And it is, but I didn't mention it. So the thing is, the outcome of a quantum key distribution protocol is this one-time pad that both parties agreed on. And basically, you can first have a quantum key distribution protocol and our protocol afterwards. But I didn't mention it in this way because it may look like our quantum distance bounding protocol depends on QKD, which is not the case. You can also have some other kind of key exchange. But of course, it's an easy target. So it's an easy thing. You can conclude those two. And the really nice thing is that you have the same hardware on both sides. So for quantum key distribution, also for quantum distance bounding, you will use the same hardware. So if it's already in place, why not also extend it? Yeah.